Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture, and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless.
I am picking it up now.
Are you sure?
Stop it! Stop being a jerk.
Stop being a griffin.
See, this is what happens. I got so many people on.
He griffined it. There's so many definitions of that. What was he actually doing?
I don't know.
But I hope by griffin you mean me a small mistake.
No.
Community. I didn't even hear this, and I'm just...
Hey, did everyone else see my link like a couple days ago that Nathan Fillion's going to be on the Community?
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. It's incredible.
Oh, so someone who is unimpressed by things that are awesome, I must be griffining it.
Yeah, that's actually a better definition. Why should I watch Doctor Who? Are you watching Doctor Who?
No.
Oh. Where'd you stop?
This jerk is giving me too much to watch.
Wait,
can you watch Serenity? Oh, yeah, sure.
You've seen it, though.
I'd watch it again.
It's not like you would have gotten through all of Doctor Who in, like, one Serenity viewing.
That's true.
It's fun. It's fun. Not everyone has to like everything.
I can do whatever I dang well please.
That's right. That's
right. I'm an adult.
Are you?
I'm a man. I'm 40.
Okay.
Sterling River.
So, now that everyone's had a chance to forget everything that I told them a little while ago.
Yeah.
Bye, Keldu.
Bye, Keldu.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Keldu.
Where's Keldu going?
Oh. Fix this in post.
What is a Keldu?
What is a Keldu?
Okay. Okay. Maybe. No, stop it. I need you to stop creeping up on the mic.
Stop doing a griffin. Stop griffining the mic.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
You ready?
Sure.
You're ready.
I think so.
Oh, goodness. This is what you guys do to me. Stop it. Welcome to Real World Theology, Episode 10. I am your host, Fizz. On this episode of the show, we explore one of the greatest movies in the verse, Serenity. This Joss Whedon film is beloved of fans and the sci-fi community in general. It is the culmination of a one-season series called Firefly, also by Joss Whedon. Heck, actually, if you don't know this or have not seen it, please just stop the podcast, go watch it, and then come back and listen to it because you're going to enjoy it way more.
All 17, 16 hours of... viewing that would be.
No, it's not that bad. It's like, what, 10? It's like 11 episodes or something?
I have to come back to the podcast the next day.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I think people were really committed.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, you won't regret it. It's possibly the best TV show ever made. Lofty claim. Personal opinion.
I'm getting a lot of lofty claims tonight.
I know.
I didn't know it was called Star Trek The Next Generation.
What? Well, I don't say that lightly, but regardless. That brings us to the movie Serenity, which has been viewed, reviewed, and dissected by nearly everyone, and will be again by this show. Joining me this week is an entire gaggle of people, another large panel of guests, all who hope to aim to misbehave.
A gaggle.
You're geese. First and best, we welcome back to the show writer and blogger, Laura.
Laura!
Who is also my wonderful and nerdy wife.
Yay!
Well, with her tonight, we are joined by writer, blogger, and comic guru, Griffin Kale.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
I'm going to continue referring you to as the comic guru until I find someone who knows more, which will probably take a long time.
Thank you. Hello, everyone.
Stop it. and not lastly, writer, sci-fi connoisseur, and amateur filmmaker, Mark Wingerter.
Howdy.
Welcome.
Thanks.
Anyway, so Serenity. In the future, a spaceship called Serenity is harboring a passenger with a deadly secret. Six rebels on the run, an assassin in pursuit. When the renegade crew of Serenity agrees to hide a fugitive on their ship, they find themselves in an awesome action-packed battle between the relentless military might of a totalitarian regime who will destroy anything or anyone to get the girl back, and the bloodthirsty creatures who roam the uncharted areas of space. But the greatest danger of all may be on their ship. Mm. Isn't that really ominous?
It's Sounds like a good movie. Sounds like, I need to write this down.
Actually, it sounds like a pretty...
A ship called... Okay.
It actually sounds like a pretty generic, like,
it does,
movie.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's why I want to use this, because it's, like, I've never thought of the movie in any kind of generic way.
No, oh, yeah.
But then again, we saw the series first. So, this movie, and furthermore, the series Firefly, make us come face-to-face with a world and characters that have to make decisions in just a screwed-up, weird universe. Mm-hmm. So, it opens up questions to faith, belief, love, hope, control, and even moral objectivity. So, with that said, with the table set, what did you guys think of the film? Or, like, well, what are your general impressions? Like, when you, because I think everyone here has seen it multiple times. Maybe except for you.
I've seen it once. Okay. Once is enough to remember forever.
Okay. So, that's what I'll say about the film. There's... Well, when you think back upon this film, what are your impressions? Because I don't want to say, like, do you like it? Because I know everyone here likes the film. Mm-hmm. So, kind of explore that space.
Well, first, I mean, it's just a really good sci-fi movie. I mean, if you like sci-fi movies, this is, like, in the top 10. I mean, it's just so well made. It's it explores all of these things that you want sci-fi to explore, and it does them in a very, you know, not jumbled up way, and not kind of throwing, you know, because it throws so much out there, and it doesn't do it in a very light way. It doesn't, you know, gloss over some heavy things. It really kind of digs in deep, and that's a Joss Whedon thing. But this, you know, much like the series, and then on into the movie, it just really explores a lot of really interesting and deep things in a fantastically fun and adventurous and thrilling way. I mean, it's just, that's it. When you go to movies, this is what you want from a movie. That's what I think about. When I think about Serenity, I just think about, it's just almost a perfect sci-fi movie in terms of sci-fi.
Hmm. Excellent.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I definitely feel a lot of the same ways. That is just a fantastic movie, and even, not even sci-fi, just in general, it's a really good movie, and mm-hmm. Really fun to watch with people who maybe, I will say that you can watch it and having never seen Firefly or anything about Firefly and enjoy it. But having seen Firefly and enjoy it as much as I did, I think that there's something about the culmination of so many things, the kind of return of everybody, the death of some characters, the you know, the full story of some that you never, like, you were like, what is her deal? As to more than just, like, weird, and I'm talking about River, just, like, as to more than just being, like, a weird character,
mm-hmm.
What's her deal? And, like, finally having a story where you kind of understand more of, like, what happened. But I definitely feel like you can watch it without having seen all of Firefly. Mm-hmm. I just don't think you definitely can enjoy it to the fullest extent without having known the characters and, like, being so excited when a horror shows up, like, you're like,
I think I like it because it's really honest and it, like, really touches the heart of a lot of big issues. And also while giving you things that are unreal, like not just the universe as a whole and the great adventure, but also it's just so quick and witty, and people aren't really like that. But I love to see, like, people talking to each other and in that way, and always having the smart, funny thing to say. So it's satisfying on that level, too, that it's enough unreality to, to put you in a new place, but it's also really honest and true.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I always cry during it at the same places because I just feel like it really does reach into the heart of some pretty big questions mm-hmm. about life.
Well, I would say that everything you guys have said all rolls into the reason, I mean, I like it in the first place. I mean, this is one of the, I think this is the first movie that we're doing on this podcast that is not a new release.
Mm-hmm.
And so it obviously is striking some kind of trigger. I do think it deals with deep issues. It deals with very complicated relationships, but it also gives a lot of very straightforward and simple answers to lots of those relationships and presents it in a world that is sci-fi, but not sci-fi in the way that there has to be, like, aliens or laser beams, you know, yeah. Some type of super futuristic type thing. It basically gives us a world that is not post-apocalyptic, but it's just space. It's like a Western in space, and it's been compared to a Western in space. And I think that's one of my favorite things. It's not too overreaching, so you're not so concerned with the technology or some kind of gimmick about the sci-fi thing that you lose sight of the characters. And I think the characters are probably the best part about it. The situation they end up in the movie, which was what we'll hopefully mainly focus on here, because I feel like we could probably have like a 3-hour podcast just on the series itself, even though it was only like I said, 11 episodes. It does tackle a couple of big issues because it does, like Griffin was talking about, continue a lot of stories that we never had resolved in the series. And by doing that, it throws a lot at us in a very short amount of time. Mm-hmm. Lots of character, backstory, motivation, possible futures, things like that. And then the end of some characters, which is very sad. But I think if you're a non-critical person and you watch this movie, it kind of comes to a head at one specific point if you want to think, oh, what was the theological message of a movie like Serenity? And I feel like that point, if you don't dig very deep, is the conversation that Malcolm Reynolds, the captain of Serenity, has with Shepherd Book when Shepherd Book is dying. Mm-hmm. And Shepherd Book basically throws out this thing that I think is supposed to hit really, really hard. It's supposed to make the audience be like, yes, yes, that's the thing. And he just basically says, I don't care what you believe, just believe in something. And to me, that falls a little short. I mean, did it actually stick with any of you guys? I mean, did it make an impression? Did it make a light bulb go off?
No.
I almost don't even want to talk about it because I don't know. Maybe there's a lot of places for that conversation to go, but it seems to me even a gross misunderstanding of what Shepherd Book claims to believe, which we're assuming is Christianity, because clearly Shepherd Book chose a religion and it affected the way that he lived his life and decisions that he made. And so it just seems like it doesn't seem in character with other things that Shepherd Book has done throughout the series.
Well, it's a culmination of a lot of the conversations that he had with Malcolm, particularly just in the movie, but kind of harkening back a little bit to the series. Because, I mean, he never really says, the only time you ever get any kind of indication, and, you know, again, I know we want to kind of focus on the film, but you've seen the series, so you kind of throw back the things. The only indication that we ever get of what his religion is when River's tearing up his Bible in the series and, you know, saying these things kind of don't make sense and all this stuff. And even the conclusions he comes to in that scene are not very Christian in the terms of what, you know, kind of how we believe. So, I mean, it's very kind of never really defined for me for what he actually does believe. And I think he's more of a, kind of a humanist approach to his religion where he's just kind of living the life and, you know, his gospel is kind of his actions, which is a very Joss Whedon type of approach to religion. So, you know, for me, for him to say that to Malcolm in particular, he always kind of has something to say different to each character. You know, with River, it was very specific about what she was doing with the Bible. With Malcolm, Malcolm's just riding on the seat of his pants, and he's trying to, you know, get him to commit to one thing because he believes that will make him better. He believes that will make Mal better, that will make the team better, that will make the world better. So it was kind of a culmination to me of what they were going at, you know, in conversations. Because they do talk a lot about it in the film. You know, so I mean, but as far as like a pow right in the kisser, that's the movie right there. No, it didn't. I don't think, and I don't know that it's necessarily supposed to, because, you know, if I think in terms of Joss Whedon, I think, well, that's not what he's going for. It's kind of more of a hopeless situation that he's trying to point out the bad of a oppressive government kind of point. So I think that was just a nugget to throw in there to kind of enrich Malcolm's character.
I was just going to say, it seems to me that, like, Shepherd Book is supposed to be, like, the voice of wisdom. I mean, they always return to him and And Malcolm even says, even though he doesn't want a sermon from Shepherd, he always comes to him for advice. He says that when they go hide out there. But I mean, like, I know we're going to get into the operative versus Mal, but the operative does believe in something, and he believes in it very strongly, and it doesn't make the world a better place. And it seems to me that the voice of reason would know that that would have that concept that mm-hmm. believing in something is not enough. And so, I don't know. I guess maybe it's maybe. I mean,
I think it's true. Well, it also in terms of belief for him to say that in terms of the rest of the movie, you know. The operative doesn't really know what he's believing in. He's just committed to it.
Yeah.
And so I think there's shades of that all over the film, but also in what he's telling him. And it's like, I really kind of don't care what you believe in. Just believe in something. And I think he's more saying it to say, know what you believe, you know, whatever it is.
Well, yeah, because I feel like that the operative, the character of the operative kind of points out, like whenever you juxtapose those two characters, you show the Shepherd and the operative, you kind of look at somebody who kind of knows what they understand their belief. And I think maybe what Joss is trying to get at in that is just saying, like, don't blindly just follow after something and don't blindly follow after anything. Believe in something and have enough conviction about it that you take the time and the effort to get to know it and really understand why and what it is doing. And so
More about conviction than belief.
Yeah, I think it's definitely more about conviction than belief. And so I think that definitely he could have put that conversation, he could have worded that conversation differently with Shepherd and Malcolm to make that more impactful. But I think that the whole, like, just believe in something thing is said enough in movies and in culture and in media that it's like, yeah, we get it. Like, we, you know, we all know that a lot of stories kind of point to that. Not a lot, but enough stories that it's not something new. He's not reinventing the wheel, in that sense. And so I think that for him to point maybe more towards that idea of like having a conviction about something. And so because I think the Shepherd character is lovable, so it kind of shows that Whedon has this idea of like these people who care for others are lovable characters. These people who come and meet the needs of others and have a conviction and have a belief. Are characters that we enjoy. And he could have easily made that character someone that we didn't like. From the beginning, there was opportunities for that of the series, not the movie. But I think that by the movie, you're sad. Like you do tear up in that point. And you're really upset that happens to him. And so I think that, yeah, I think Whedon is trying to get at more the conviction side of things than just the belief.
Yeah, and I actually have a quote about the Bible, you know, when Rivers messed up the Bible and Shepherd says, you know, River, you don't fix the Bible. And she says, it's broken. It doesn't make sense. And he says, it's not about making sense. It's about believing in something and letting that belief be real enough to change your life. It's about faith. You don't fix faith, River. It fixes you. So I think that's the echo of everything that's throughout the whole series and the film.
Well, which I think still sounds good unless you take that to like seminary or you take it to the pulpit and then people are like, wait a minute, is this looks like a universalist church?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Well, I mean, because, okay, so you take just believe in something or just have conviction in something, even if we change it like that. But that changes Malcolm. Mm-hmm. Seeing what happened, starting to believe in something does change our protagonist.
Right.
But the operative even says that he believes in something. He is very, you know, he has a deep conviction. The operative is like, it's not my place to ask. I believe in something greater than myself, a better world, a world without sin. Mm-hmm. So the problem I think we really run into is maybe it's not just enough to believe, but maybe we need to believe in something that's true. Because if it's just getting behind a character that believes something, then why are we not rooting for the operative? Mm-hmm. He wants a world without sin. Who doesn't want a world without sin?
Yeah, and he's believing in it to the point of like really sacrificing much more than really most of these characters are that are on the ship. Like,
oh yeah.
And he sacrifices way more in his belief and conviction than any of the people on the ship. Oh, yeah. And so if that's what we're supposed to root for, then yeah, it very much like I said, wording that conversation better.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at that and say that Joss had a point with that, he had a, like, that was supposed to be the moment. Mm-hmm. There is really no moment to it when you, like, juxtapose it with the rest of the story.
Yeah.
I'm using the word juxtapose a lot tonight, and I'm going to stop that now.
Sorry. That's the last time.
That is the last straw.
No, because that reminds me, you know, Malcolm says, like, you know, I don't kill women and children, and he's just like, I do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I've got no problem. Like, it's like, yeah. how could you, and he's like,
how do you expect to live in a world? Like, he's like, I don't. He's like, it's not a world for me. I mean, he is like the ultimate in, the operative, just to be clear, is the ultimate in conviction, but he doesn't believe in something that's true or possible. And he finds out later in the film that what he did believe in his entire life, and it's almost lots of critiques of the film, lots of critiques of the operative, have kind of said that that's kind of Joss Whedon taking a punch at organized religion, saying like, oh, well, you know, he's a fanatic all his life. But then when someone says, look, have a little bit of fact here, you know, he, at the end of the movie, he shows up and says, or well, Malcolm, you know, says, if I ever see you again, you know, bad things will happen, paraphrase. And the operative just says, there is nothing left to see. Right. You know, there's nothing left of him because all he was a fanaticism. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, we have Malcolm pursuing truth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we as the audience know it's truth because we get to go along for the ride. But, I mean, I feel like there's just a big distinction between believing in something or having a conviction about something and it being right.
Well, one of
and it being truth.
One of the articles that you sent out was from On Pop Theology, and the author was anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that really interesting because he was basically making the case that Mal is, without believing in God, Mal still is the better character, or is what everyone should aspire to. And so you don't really need a belief in God to make you a good person or to, you know. I thought that was a really good article, except one thing he said is that Mal's moral code is to love and protect those who earn it and need it, no matter the cost. For everyone else, an equal and opposite reaction to their evil action. And this author of the article is saying that that works for him and it makes him a good person and the world a better place. But then my mind immediately goes to the beginning of the film where Mal kills an innocent man that just was begging to be taken off the planet. And he has his reasons why he did it, but it just seems to me really shaky ground when you're the one making all the truth decisions, because
moral objectivity.
And his reasons were selfish too. And that's the thing, is like, when you talk about he had his reasons, it was like his reasons were completely selfish that he kicked him off the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was a caring act that he shot the guy to save him from like the death that the Reavers were given.
Well, but even Zoe says, you know, she kind of implies, and he's like, "Well, we should have dropped the payload, or the payout." You know,
yeah.
What we're gonna do? We can't just like float around here. I'm responsible for all these.
He's like, "I'm responsible for all these people," and that's another mouth to feed and another like weight that we can't carry. And it's like, that's really like selfish. And I think that the beginning of the film is kind of it definitely shows without the love of a whore there. He's kind of like, just floating and flaking on his conviction. And so whenever she returns to the story and returns to the picture, that's whenever kind of the conviction sets back in. Like the actual, like, I'm going to do good again because I have a reason to do good again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you're talking when you're talking theology, I think that their picture of the picture of their relationship is probably a better picture.
You talking about Malcolm and Inara?
Inara, yeah. I keep getting her name wrong. I'm terrible. I'm like confusing her with Zoe Saldana from Star Trek, because I just watched that last night after watching Gravity, which is fantastic, by the way. But
so much sci-fi.
So much sci-fi.
Space.
But I'm not going to watch Doctor Who. I'm just kidding. I'm going to get to it. But I think that their story is a better picture of like what passion and love offers to someone in the way that like Christ offers it than like whenever we talk about like Shepherd versus Malcolm or Malcolm versus the operative. Because like I said, like she comes back into the story and he becomes a different person who's willing to sacrifice a lot to save her and to be with her and to care for her. And it's like, well, that's love. That's just like a movie, you know, romance. But I think movie romances can also point towards like the greater romance in that, like ones that are honest and ones that are like that do have problems. Like she's a whore. Yeah. Like let's just be real about it. Like okay, then this is Hosea.
She prefers some prostitute.
Yeah. Yeah.
She calls herself a whore.
Companion.
She does. Companion.
So I think that maybe their story is one that's like has more. I feel like has more meat to it. Because she does change him and she does make him a different person.
Yeah, well, I think one of the best parts or one of the redeeming things from just believe in something, I think it happens that Malcolm ends up believing in something that's very true, but he believes in like a found family love. Like he believes in things that do bring people together that are worth fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
But we see, if you go back to Firefly, or the very first episode of Firefly, we see Malcolm Reynolds, you know, brown coat. He has faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like kissing the cross, you know, basically saying God's on their side. But then he loses his faith because he ties his faith to God doing what he expects him to, which there are lots of commentaries that talk about how that's a fairly immature faith,
mm-hmm.
because if he does everything Malcolm does, then why is Malcolm not God? You're starting to get to a cyclical loop. But then we see in the film, once we get to Serenity, Malcolm has a very live and let live. He's not really passionate about anything except being alive. Because he even says, see, here is us on the raggedy edge. Don't push me and I won't push you. You know,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't really have any direction. When they go on the first job, you know, it's one of those, it means a lot more the second time you see it kind of lines. When River's coming down to get on board their little hover vehicle to go into town,
mm-hmm.
and he goes, you know, do you know your part in all this, little one? And she's like, do you? You know, mm-hmm. it's like, boom, fine explosion. You know, and you know, you look back on the film and you realize that River's a seer and she kind of understands what's going on. And she is maybe saying something a little more intense than he's ready for. Cause he's just like, this is what I do. Mm-hmm. This is what I do.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not really what he does. He's really a caretaker. So belief changes that. He starts to believe in love and he starts to move away from that. He really moves to, there is something worth fighting for. There is something worth dying for. So
it's funny to me that, it's just interesting to me to know from interviews and stuff what Joss Whedon believes, because mm-hmm. if I was basing my concept of his belief on this film, I would think that he believed in all the things I believed in, because I feel like Serenity, this movie just seems to reinforce a lot of my beliefs about what is compelling, self-sacrifice. And that even we're talking about truth and that, and about needing to believe in a truth that's bigger than our own concept or of truth or our own moral code. And there is a truth that Mal didn't believe in until he saw it for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And Operative didn't know was true until Mal revealed it to him. And it was a truth that was bigger than both of them, bigger than their concept of life or whatever. And it actually changes both of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's saying there is a bigger truth out there, mm-hmm. and that it's beyond what we could even conceive or imagine, and that it is transforming.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, Mal had a support system, a community that yeah. actually kind of softened his transformation or helped him transform in a positive way. And Operative didn't have that.
I mean, I definitely think, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good and evil just plainly put out there. So that's interesting that you say that, because I mean, you know, is it enough for a film to just have good and evil and say that reinforces my belief, you know, killing masses of people because, you know, you thought it would make a better world is wrong. You know, and it's evil. And then good is, you know, self-sacrifice, mm-hmm. doing what's good for, you know, your community and people and whatever. And I think films in a sense, and a lot of art and a lot of music, whatever it may be, kind of they're there. That's their job, is to kind of present two sides of an argument. Ultimately, you can be argued as good and evil or whatever it may be that particular piece of art is tackling. And so I think what makes a great film is when it kind of starts to gray some areas and starts to present other pictures, because something that you said is a minute ago, like, well, you know, the operative is you know, believing in something, and he's really rooting for something, and he's, you know, got all the conviction in the world. Why are we not rooting for him? And I think when you put it in a film context and you kind of lay it out there as like, this guy's killing people, this is wrong. But if you kind of take that belief system that what he has and put it in like the real world or a different light that's very, very gray, I think some people would be rooting for him. You know, and I think that that's what's so interesting about this film in particular, is it doesn't really say, you know, it presents a very clear good and evil, but it also says what's right and wrong. You know, what's the right decision to make here? Because yes, Mal is this good character, but he kills some guy at the beginning, you know? So it presents all these things and it's not afraid to, like, you know, show all the little intricacies of what leads to good and what leads to bad and all the right and wrong decisions in between. So, I mean, belief is, you know, very mixed here.
Well, when we talk about our Captain Malcolm Reynolds and we kind of tie it into what you're just talking about with building a better world, you know, all of them want to have a better world, but there seems to be two very different ways to do it. At the end of the film, we see Malcolm Reynolds kind of saying, having that conversation with River Tam on the bridge, being like, oh, but you know what I'm going to say. And she's like, oh, I want to hear you say it anyway. And he goes on and he's like, you know, the most important thing to a ship is love. You can learn all the math in the verse, but you take a boat in the air that you don't love, she'll shake you off just as sure as the turning of the worlds. Love keeps her in the air when she ought to fall down, tells you she's hurting for she keens, makes her a home. And then, you know, she goes, it says storm's getting worse. And he goes, we'll pass through it soon enough. Mm-hmm. Just boom. And that's almost like the last thing that it says in the movie. Yeah. But on the other hand, you have the Alliance, who believe they can actually make a better world. Mm-hmm. Not, so it's like by changing behavior, mm-hmm. not by changing the heart of people.
Right.
And what they end up doing is actually causing something worse. I mean, science.
Yeah.
Not that I have any problem with science, but, you know, it's one of those things where you take the shortcut. You kind of say, I don't want to invest time in people and really show them a better way. Mm-hmm. I want to just snap my fingers and make it so. To the point where the Alliance actually become worse than the things they create, because they're the ones that created the evil.
Yeah.
You know, we all want to be like, oh, the Reavers are the bad guys, but then the Reavers are basically sympathetic characters at the end. Mm-hmm. I mean, very scary, don't get near me sympathetic characters, but, you know, it's like, oh, well, that's a whole new perspective.
Yeah, there's a clear bad guy, but you don't even see the clear bad guy. The clear bad guy is the Alliance, and it's just kind of this overwhelming force. The, like, immediate bad guys of the Reavers are not even necessarily true bad guys. They're just kind of messed up people who have been messed up because of what the Alliance did. You've got all this gray in between. More gray and more gray. And so, I mean, and this, to me, rings true a lot of what Joss Whedon does and all of his other series too. I mean, there's a lot of existentialism. And I was reading about this today, so I'm not this smart, but I remember
I'm not normally this smart, but right now
one philosophical kind of like shade of existentialism is called bad faith. And bad faith, what bad faith is saying you believe something because of cultural pressures, and, you know, you don't actually, you give up the will to your own freedom because of cultural pressures, and you say, I believe this, but you don't actually, if you had the choice and you let yourself be free, you wouldn't actually believe it necessarily. Mm-hmm. So that's all throughout this and his work, and, you know, I think that's what makes this film great, and what we can kind of, if we're trying to find out what all this belief is about, and in our own lives and in this film, that's one part of it that's trying to produce that in this film.
I think there is an overwhelming concept of Christianity that we are about, that Christians are about changing behavior, just like the Alliance. Yeah. That it's all about making everybody really good people. But one thing I've been really ruminating over is the fact that the crew that we love so well on Serenity actually have a lot of the same qualities as the Reavers. I mean, obviously the Reavers were people at one point, or are still people. I wrote down, they have some of the Reaver tendencies in the Serenity crew are fear, rage, violence. Jane is very violent. Please let me take the grenades. distrust, greed, anger, lying, betrayal. And actually, I don't want to speak for everybody, but my faith causes me to believe, instead of that we're trying to eradicate bad behavior from people, and that's our ultimate goal, is that we actually have those things, and yet we are still loved. Mm-hmm. And it's love, and it's the sacrifice of love, Christ's sacrifice of love, that actually makes us want to transform. But the thing I love about almost every character in this movie is that everyone, has flaws and faults, mm-hmm. and yet they're still lovable. They're still redeemable. They still do good things.
I don't know. Can you find fault with Wash? I didn't find one single problem with Wash.
I mean, even Shepard, when he's dying, he says, he throughout the series is nonviolent. He mm-hmm. he doesn't carry a gun. There's one time where they're fighting off bad guys and he uses a water hose instead of a gun. But he kills some guy that was on the ship that destroyed his commune or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he says, it wasn't very Christian of me. But it just, to me, is that's kind of a picture of the Christian life, is that we're just doing the best that we can. Mm-hmm. And that's not always the greatest thing. But I don't know, just that we're loved anyway. Mm-hmm. And that's what transforms us. That's what makes us want to do good for others when we tend to be selfish. Anyway.
So does this film say that, that flaws are redeemable, or that flaws should be punished? I mean, because you could kind of argue both ways.
Both!
Yeah, I mean, because Malcolm is very, very flawed, and he's the hero, and, the operative is very clearly the bad guy, and very, clearly flawed.
Wasn't this the problem with objective moralism?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see all the good things you did, so I think you should probably die.
Yeah.
But then once we learned about the Reavers, we're like, oh, the Reavers.
Yeah.
Oh, they probably shouldn't be shooting poison darts at people's necks, but...
Or... They don't know any better.
They're wearing their skin. I mean, or, the whole thing.
Or raping people until they die.
Yeah, hearing from the series, yeah. Well, yeah, objective moralism is ultimately flawed, because, nobody can know. Nobody's God,
It's interesting to me that just this concept of love, because Mal, I mean, just that last line that you read, love is what holds us up when we ought to fall down. Love is what redeems us when we ought to be condemned. And the operative doesn't have that, because what he loved mm-hmm. actually disappears when he betrays it or whatever, it doesn't do what it wants. Mm-hmm. But the things that Mal loved actually came around him and sacrificed for him and supported him. And so that, to me, is what, causes his positive transformation.
It's interesting that Joss even wrote love in there, because love is not anywhere throughout the rest of the series. It not explicitly like that.
Well, I feel like maybe that there was... And there's so much conjecture about the series and about where it was going and, what,
right.
Because I feel like what he was building towards was that, and mm-hmm. he kind of just had to fold it all into this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about, and for background, I guess a little bit of background, if you haven't already watched the show, maybe you've only seen Serenity, maybe you've never seen either one of these things and you're just listening to this podcast.
Stop, go watch them, come back.
Yeah, please do that. but if you still just can't listen to us and you won't, but the show ran for a season, and whenever it ended, a lot of people were really upset. It's kind of like the old Arrested Development thing. Like, people were not happy. They're like, mm-hmm. why did the show go away? It was great. And so the movie was kind of like a, here's one last little gift to the fans. But I think that whenever you talk about, it is kind of a weird thing, because you have to look at it as though he had to fold all of his ideas for the show into mm-hmm. one, 2-hour movie, and that was it. And there you go. And so I think what he was building towards was love. I think what he was building towards was a future, and maybe some of those future stories that we kind of get a glimpse of at the very end. But I do feel like that. I do feel like that's why he included it. That's all that to say.
And I agree with that. I think you could argue that he would have, built upon that community, because they only had one season of a dozen or so episodes to build that community.
Yeah, I think it's hard to say that outside of maybe Wash, Zoe, and Mal, none of those people should have had like a close community in the sense of like that they had spent enough time with each other to say, I like, care very deeply for this person. You know, yes, he loved Inara, Mal loved Inara, and you know,
Zoe loves Wash.
Zoe loves Wash, and like, you know, Kaylee is just like a lovable character, but I think it's hard to say like in that short amount of time that you saw them that they would have, you know, a deep community where I mean,
well, especially love at the beginning of the beginning of the film, Whedon basically frames it when you see the operative walk through the hologram and he's kind of asking the scientist, you know, do you see that? You know, he's like, oh, I don't see anything. He's like, that's love. That's something far more dangerous, you know, than the knowledge that she probably has in her head. So
yeah, it's just interesting to see a Joss Whedon story that involves love because there's so few of them. He doesn't really write about it a lot, I don't feel. Because, I mean, you know, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen a lot of Joss Whedon, I mean, there's tons of stuff out there. I mean, the Dollhouse and Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel and all of that. I mean, I've seen the majority of his work. You got the Avengers, of course, and S.H.I.E.L.D. that's on TV now.
And Roseanne.
He was on Roseanne.
In Toy Story. Very a couple lines of X-Men.
Yeah.
Different level of involvement.
Absolutely. He wrote some lines in Toy Story. I mean, he's got a lot of stuff.
One, the love he does portray never ends well.
Yeah, I think that would be the thing. He tries.
Because, I mean, I think Joss is, from knowing his interviews and stuff like that, about what he believes, and, you know, especially the one that you were linked to us about hope and how he sees the world as very hopeless. Well, love doesn't really enter into a worldview like that. I mean, you know, he's married, obviously has a wife and kids that he both, you know, deeply loves. But when he projects his thoughts about humanity and mankind and the future possibilities of that, love doesn't enter in at all. Because if there's no hope, there's no love. And he doesn't really have hope for the future. So to see him put in this stuff is, I thought, was interesting, especially in this film, because like to throw that in at the end, it's like love didn't really have much to do with the rest of the storyline at all, you know, even though it's kind of framed like you said at the beginning and stuff like that. I think that's his ultimate belief. Maybe he could have built on that much more, but a lot of this delves more in like good and evil and like humanity's just kind of bad, you know.
Well, let me ask this. Now that Mal's found love, what is he gonna do
with
it? I mean, like, is there hope for Mal? I mean, we saw him move away from faith and belief that, like, there is something there, something worth believing in, something that's greater, an orchestrator, and move to just get mine, trying to keep the people who helped me get mine alive, and then move back to a more intimate understanding of what really keeps a ship running. Do any of you guys think that down the road, obviously we probably will never know the answer to this.
Never know. No.
We can hope.
We can have like the 20 years later.
Yeah.
So is it possible that a character like Malcolm Reynolds, stop it.
I'm blessed him. He sneezed.
A character like Malcolm Reynolds could ever find his way back to faith from love?
I think that you would have to have watched the series and the film to see this, but in the series, things end pretty well for the Serenity crew. I mean, in terms of they love each other, they're together, they're at least in the sky until the next big tragedy or whatever.
Burying their husbands.
I'm talking about the show.
The series.
But then at the beginning of Serenity, he obviously, his belief system is not continuing to grow him or lead him to hope, because at one point he had accepted Simon and River onto his crew, and in Serenity, he is very quick to kick them off or allow them to leave. And that seems like a deterioration. Yeah. And that seems a deterioration of where he was before in the series. And he basically drove Inara away, which Kaylee says. And so things are actually deteriorating for him. His belief structure is not sustaining even the things that he loves. Actually, I thought it was really interesting you bringing up that he started changing when Inara came back on, because I didn't even think about that. But that's at least true in terms of the way that it was structured, that things started shifting when she came back. And at the end of the show, I mean, throughout all of Firefly, they squabbled, they fought, they just could never be on the same page. Even when they almost said that they loved each other, they just drove each other away further. And the only time that we ever see hope for that relationship is at the end of this movie. So it seems to me that something happened to him that, again, is transforming him and is actually, I think his future looks hopeful based on the end of that film, because now he is in right relationship with River and Simon. They're back on the crew. Inara is there and she's saying, I don't know what's going to happen, but I want to give this a shot for the first time ever in that series. So it seems to me like something happened that is leading him in a good direction, but I don't know if it's really enough to keep him from spiraling down again.
That's, you know, I think if we're projecting in terms of a storyline, I think probably, you know, Joss would have gotten him there. But I think, you know, if you're talking about a character in, you know, in real life, I mean, there's shades of that throughout your whole life. I mean, you might head in that direction, but you might have another tragedy, you know, the next Reaver attack or whatever, you know, that would lead him down something. So I think all the facets are there, which means he's a very well-written character, you know, that all the facets are there to kind of project that he would just be very human about it, you know. But yeah, the fact that he, you know, kind of comes to this conclusion kind of gives you that idea that he would, in terms of storyline, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm. So. It seems to me that the concept that's projected is that he's on a right track. But I think from where I'm sitting, from what I believe, that he hasn't actually found a truth that is so much bigger than him or so beyond circumstances changing it that he could actually keep going in that direction. It seems to me that belief system is just going to lead him right back to the place he was before, where relationships are going to splinter. And
like if Inara dies and Zoe dies.
Right. Then what's he going to do with that? Because he hasn't actually transcended the concept that he already had about what is right and good and what's worth living for. But I mean, that to me, that's just kind of from Christianity perspective, as I see it. Mm-hmm. But I think the film is saying that he actually has turned a corner and he's, you know.
See, I think Joss is really good at least in his stuff about, you know, there's so many shades to it. I think he really presents that. So, I mean, yeah, as he turned, I don't think he's definitively saying, all right, that's it, he turned the corner. Yeah, because
you can look at as many seasons of Buffy as he did.
Yeah.
And there really is no, you can't say, like, black or white where those characters, like, yes, you can say where they end, but where they go in the story is so just, he goes everywhere with them and takes them very different places at very different points. And so I think he really, I think what maybe he's getting at is that the human experience is a very fickle one he believes that it can't stay consistent.
And that the consistency of any is going to go downward versus upward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you can even look at that, like even with that moment with Shepard at the very end or at the very end of his life where he kills that guy, I think that's even just like a glimmer of that. He's just continuing to point to that, saying like, the human experience is not consistent and it can't be, even with faith, is what he's trying to get at. And part of me wants to say and agree that on some level, like, yeah, it is hard to keep consistency like that and to not fall and to not stumble and to not step into, you know, those things. Specifically, like it is really hard to it is really easy to look away from our Savior and fall and look away and look at maybe our situation, which maybe what Shepard was doing in that moment. He kind of got angry and he looked away from his Savior, looked at his situation and was like, I'm pissed. Bam, you're dead.
Yeah.
And I think that's like a really good picture of just, I think that is probably the best picture. Shepard's story is right there is a really good picture of just like what the believer's experience should be and what it is going to be. Maybe not what it should be, but what it is going to be. Mm-hmm. because it isn't going to be perfect, and it isn't going to be flawless, and it is going to come with moments where you kill someone, maybe not physically, like literally, but in ways, yeah. So,
The movie ends exactly how it begins. It feels pretty cyclical, because in the beginning frame, a piece of the ship flies off, and at the very end of the movie, a piece of the ship flies off again, even after all this reconstruction they've done on the ship, which kind of feels a little bit exhausting, because it's like, are they going to go through this whole kind of thing again, where they, you know, their lives are in danger, and they, but I guess that is kind of life. I mean, yeah, it's hard to believe in a God of love when you face tragedy.
Yeah, and I think that even that little piece, and I'm sure, knowing Whedon like he didn't, he wanted that to be something. It was a purposeful, but I think it was more than just like a haha, that's funny. Like, it was like, even as great as this is right now, it's never going to be perfect. It's never going to be right, and I think that that's a good picture of what the gospel teaches, is that not that it's never going to be right, but that, like, right now it's not right. Like, things just aren't right. Things aren't going to be right. And until that time comes that Christ does return, like, things aren't going to be right, and nothing's going to be perfect. And pieces are going to be falling off our ship as the minute we think we've got it all back together. I think that's the best picture of, like, what, I think Paul talks about in the Gospels, and you can look at, like, even like the story of the prodigal son, like, not being willing to forgive, or not really willing to like repent of our righteousness in those moments where we like think, ah, I finally got it all together. Mm-hmm. I finally got it figured out. Like, I'm finally good. Being able to repent of our righteousness in that moment. And I think that's like the unrepentant spirit in that moment is whenever we realize, like, that in that one thing. And I've even had moments like that recently where I've kind of experienced that, and I'm like, oh, that's what these scriptures are talking about. That's what being a repentant, like, righteous person, I think is the hardest place to be. And so I think that's where, like, that moment is such a good moment. Mm-hmm. It's like, here's this piece falling off the ship. They're right back. They really are right back where they
started.
Yeah,
things aren't the way they're supposed to be. And I think that's why it's so comforting to me for the line right before that love keeps the ship in the air when it ought to fall down. Because they're going to keep making mistakes, and Malin and Ara are going to fight, and, you know, and Zoe is grieving the loss of her husband, and there are a lot of things that aren't right. But there's still love that is continuing to sow into us and transform us, despite the bad parts. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we talk about what Joss Whedon is, like, weaving into the story, mm-hmm. about hope and love and stuff like that, like, I want to take a second to actually read this a slice of this interview that I sent you guys, and for context for the listeners, because Whedon did this interview with Entertainment Weekly, and the interviewer actually asked him about what he personally believes about hope and stuff like that. And Joss Whedon said, "I can't believe anybody thinks we're actually going to make it before we destroy the planet. I honestly think it's inevitable. I have no hope." So the interviewer actually presses him and says, "That's surprising, because your work isn't bleak. Bad things happen. There's pathos. Favorite characters die. But it's not like the fifth act of Hamlet." Mm-hmm. And so Joss Whedon kind of stops for a second. Then he says, "No, my stories do have hope, because that is one of the things that is part of the solution. If there can be one. We use stories to connect, to care about people, to care about situation, to turn the mundane heroic, to make people really think about who they are. They're useful. And they're also useful to me. Because if I wrote what I really think, I would be so sad all the time. We create to fill a gap, not just to avoid the idea of dying. It's to fill some particular gap in ourselves. So yeah, I write things where people will lay down their lives for each other. And on a personal level, I know many wonderful people who are spending their lives trying to help others, or who are just decent and kind. I have friends who are extraordinary. I love my family. But on a macro level, I don't see that in the world. So I have a need to create. Hopefully that need gets translated into somebody relating to it and feeling hope. Because if we take that away, then I'm definitely right. I want to be wrong more than anything. I hate to say it. It's that line from The Lord of the Rings. I give hope to men. I keep none for myself. They say it in Elvish, so it sounds super cool. You know, very, you know, Josh Whedon kind of throwing the humor there at the end. But if he's writing hope into his own films, almost to encourage himself, he not only does he mention that there is a gap in every single person that needs to be filled by something, mm-hmm. which I just want to be like,
yeah,
you know, you've got the answer, mm-hmm. and you understand the human condition. Mm-hmm. So if we take that and we turn it, I kind of ask you guys, what hope do we see in Serenity, and how can that encourage Josh and his, you know, his own belief system? Like, what can we take away as hope?
I don't believe him.
You don't believe him?
Yeah, when he says I give men hope, I don't keep any for my own, because I think in order to give men hope, you have to have some of your own. Because you know, if you don't believe, I really think, you know, and I'm a writer, and you know, I think, you know, you hear when you're learning writing, you write what you know, which that can be adapted into many definitions. But I don't think it's possible to write anything that you don't ultimately have some belief is true, yeah. whether it's mm-hmm. part of your belief system or whether you think it can be
or could know? Imagine could be true.
Yeah, right. I feel like a lot, like Whedon is definitely, I have always felt like whenever I read stuff like that about him, I'm like, you're posturing, because you yeah. write these stories that do portray hope. Yeah. Like I look at Buffy, I look at Avengers, like these stories end with hope of a better future, of a better, you know, or like at least have moments of that. Even Serenity here, it's like, yes, it's hard, but there's like so much hope in the fact that even though Wash is gone and even though Shepard is gone, that like the family's back together, the family that still exists is there. Mm-hmm. And so I just feel like there's no way for him to write that and to write it so well mm-hmm. and him to not have some belief in it. And so I feel like he's just trying to like posture and say like, I don't have any hope.
I mean, like he might not be hopeful.
Yeah. And that's,
but he believes in hope.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, and also that's an interview and the spotlight's on you and mm-hmm. the guns to your head, give me an answer. Mm-hmm. When in fact, that's actually a really good interview, but nonetheless that exists. And I think he's just kind of, I think he's trying to dumb down to a one paragraph answer what he actually believes. I think what he ultimately would believe is that he's a realist, you know, and he understands that hope isn't just everything's going to be okay. Hope is like things are going to suck along the way. They're going to be bad along the way. But ultimately, you know, there will be some hope to be had. Now, you can still believe in hope and still think that, well, if I project the next 200 years of our society, I can imagine that we would actually not just destroy ourselves. But I think he still has hope. And I think it's evident through everything I've ever seen of his, you know, Firefly and Serenity and then Dollhouse. And then, you know, because the Avengers, especially, the hero wins. The hero goes through a whole lot of tragedy and sacrifice and everything, but ultimately the hero wins. You can't write the hero wins unless you believe that the hero can win. So I don't, you know, I think he's not exactly saying what he actually truly believes, because it's multifaceted.
Well, that was the last main point I felt like we had time to kind of hit on before we need to start wrapping up. So I just want to go around real quick and give everyone the chance. Final thoughts? Anything that you wanted to mention that we didn't have a chance to hit on?
Let me check my notes here. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's one thing I did want to say was, and it comes more from the series, but it's a very interesting thing. It's kind of a quirky little thing. At one point, Shepard says to Simon in one of the episodes called War Stories, that he quotes a Shen Yu mm-hmm. quote, is a philosopher, you know, ancient Asian philosopher. I don't know exactly the
probably Chinese.
Chinese, yeah. He says the only way to truly know someone is to torture them. I feel like Joss believes that about his characters, because he sure puts them through a lot of torture in order to get to know them. So very literally in that episode, but Throughout everything that he's ever written, there's a lot of torture they go through. So that's you know, and especially because the series is based on a lot of Chinese philosophy and belief system, or at least that's thrown in there. I think he ultimately subscribes to some of that, at least in terms of writing and creating, and maybe in terms of life too.
I think, this whole made family thing that Joss has in all of his work, he clearly believes in the power of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the church. I mean, that's what the church is supposed to be. We're all flawed. We all screw up, but we're trying to help each other to believe, to have faith, to do better, to, anyway, and there are so many examples to me in all of his different works where this made family is doing that for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I actually had never realized before watching it this last time is that River actually goes through a transformation. And I just somehow hadn't seen that before. But she's a tortured soul, and she doesn't have control over herself really. And when the crew comes around her and actually takes her to Miranda, where she's the only one who knows anything about it and really has anything to do there.
Mm-hmm.
When they sacrifice themselves to take her there, and she comes face to face with this thing that's tormenting her, and she's got the love of these people around her, there's a part where she vomits, and then when she gets up, she says, "I'm okay. Like, I'm actually okay." And I just felt like after that, she was becoming more and more a part of the team. She was gaining more control over her mind and over her power, whatever, her being her badassery. But that, and I never really liked River in the series because she was just some crazy, I don't know, there was really nothing for me to get behind.
Well,
but
she didn't really have like much of a point in the series.
Exactly.
And I think that was where
this is going to be a slow build, and
yeah,
they canceled it. It was like, whoa.
And your mind was going to be blown like the whole time.
Yeah.
I got to go back and watch like 3 seasons of her get to this point.
Yeah.
But she says, at one point she says, when she's in Miranda and she's dealing with this thing that she's been having dreams of, and now she's seeing it in reality, she says, "Please God, make me a stone," because she's actually feeling more than she can even handle. And it's by sharing that burden with the rest of the crew that she finds healing.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually really hit me this time. And then at the end of the show, she's more the way that Simon described her when he first came on board the ship.
Yeah.
She's snarky. She's really super smart, but she's still kind of a little girl. And she's having a conversation with Mal at the end where she is that personality again. So
that's what I really liked about the last episode of the series, which is actually one of my favorite episodes of the series, because she actually does change in that final moment. You know, we have these, 8, 9, 10 episodes or whatever of her just kind of existing and like, I feel like I will eventually understand what she's doing. Then you finally get to the last episode, and she's like, she goes through a very quick, in that 1 hour episode, very quick transformation of like thinking that the whole crew hates her and that she doesn't, but it's like she accepts that, and that's why the rest of the events of that episode can take place, and she kind of ultimately saves them. Mm-hmm. And she kind of does it the childish way, and you can kind of tell that they were going to develop that even more, and that's where the movie comes in to kind of like just speed up that development, and this is what I was going to do for the next, 3 seasons or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think she does go through a really interesting transformation very quickly at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you said, very much more in the movie too. So, because I think she was basically, wasn't she supposed to be the central character of all of this?
Well, all the events in Serenity she's the fulcrum.
Yeah. So, I mean, that would make sense that she's everything that kind of, got started in the series and everything that you could, if the series had 5 seasons or something, she would have been the main character.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of this would have been like her, she would have been like kind of in a different way, kind of the Buffy of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Not, Mal is very much the Buffy of like in terms of the spearhead character who's kicking all the butt, but she would have kind of come in there and been that other side of the Buffy character, So
mm-hmm.
She's very interesting. I always kind of enjoyed her. Especially the way she's portrayed. That's very good. A lot of good acting and writing in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You good, Griffin? Nothing else to add?
felt like they
covered it all.
Covered it. Yeah, I was gonna mention something about the family thing, and but honestly, I think we've covered that. My biggest thing in any community, especially whenever I look at the church and about the Christian community, most of the people that I'm like best friends with or closest friends with, I would not even relate to if it weren't for Christ. I often think of who I would call like my closest friend in all things and of our relationship and of him. And whenever I think about that, I'm like, you annoy me, you frustrate me, you're like so different from me in so many ways, but because I see Christ in you, I move towards you. And I think that that's the community. Like, I think that that's the church. And so when I look at these characters, I think it's very much the same way. Like for Mal and Inara, it very much is that. Like, you annoy me, you frustrate me, you're passive, I'm direct. Like, there are so many things that, like, they should not have any interaction. But something, like, some common desire, some common goal is drawing them to each other. And I don't think that that's, like, an opposite. And I think a lot of times people are like, opposites attract. I'm like, no. Common goal, mm-hmm. common passion attracts. And like, seeing passion in somebody else attracts. Opposites don't attract. It just, a lot of times it just happens that, you know, two people are opposite, end up being passionate about the same thing. Like, that's pretty normal. Mm-hmm.
Or see the same passion in a different way that's attractive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I'm really glad that you operate the way you do, because if you didn't operate the way that you do, this probably wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. As well. And I think I'm realizing that about a lot of relationships. And I think that that's like the church is just that if Mark didn't operate the way that he did and Mikey didn't operate the way that he did and Laura didn't operate the way that she did, like, we probably wouldn't like be having a really good conversation right now, because if all that happened is like all of us were fighting for space in the conversation, it would be loud and obnoxious and nobody would want to listen to this. But you find that people are like willing to sit back and enjoy and just listen. And I think that really, like, having that common goal of like, let's do the best thing that we can do here and love Christ in this, is where I feel like that the idea of the church, and I think the idea of like what happens with the crew is just that they have this common goal of like caring for people that they meet and doing the best that they can and getting a job and keeping the ship up. And so they all operate differently to make that work. And some of them I like and some of them I just don't. I think that at the same time, like, I love all the characters because I kind of, in some ways, want them to succeed, and in some ways also want them to get a job and keep the ship up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's like, I can relate to the idea of like caring for these characters in the same way of like, I don't love everybody I'm in community with, or like, I don't like everybody I'm in community with, but because of like the common goal that we all seem to share, I'm like, yeah, I love you all and I really care about you all, even though I maybe don't particularly like you today. Mm-hmm. So,
the ship's still going to lose pieces, but you're all still on it.
Yeah.
And you all have something to contribute.
Yeah.
Just like this
in
podcast.
In a different way.
It's like, just call it the Serenity Podcast.
There you go.
That's what we're actually calling it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Do we all have to pick characters? Who gets to die?
Oh, I want to be washed. I'll be Jane.
Always bring grenades. Okay, so with that, we move to sort of wind down the show with our come on moments. And we all love this film so much, but surely there is something that we all don't like. And Mark requested to go first. So
I think we should just all say it together, because it has to be the same thing. Ready? One, two, three.
I really want to know this, because
you're not sure.
I'm not sure.
You're not sure? Okay, really,
so
not sure?
It's good, Mark.
The death of Wash.
Oh, okay.
And I'll tell you why. The reason why is because I thought it was random and strangely not earned. And really, the real reason is because if they were going to do a sequel and get funded for a sequel, Shepard Book also died, but he was for the same reason that Wash also died, because they weren't contracted for a sequel, the actors.
Fun fact.
Oh, yeah?
In another interview, Joss Whedon said he had a way to bring Wash back.
Yeah, he did have a way to bring Wash back. Now, I know that, but I thought in terms of the movie and like continuing, like, these characters are going to live on in my heart, in my mind, now they got to do it without Wash.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I was really annoyed by that.
Okay, good. Well, I mean, I was disheartened by that, but that wasn't where I would have gone. Because
how would he come back? I always thought he could be like a Reaver, and then like they would like unconvert him or something.
I don't want to think about it because it makes me sad that I'd have to think about it instead of watching it.
Exactly.
So Griffin looks like he's ready.
Sorry, I got distracted. Mine isn't real. Like, yes, I think that unoriginally, I could easily just say, yes, I'm with you. That is like the reason they aren't contracted for a sequel. And so I'm with you. I was like, that's a stupid way to die. I hated whenever Mal kicked that guy off the shuttle. I was like,
the hover shuttle thing?
Yeah. I was like, what the heck? It's like, get that. No, he is like, he is a good guy.
Yeah.
Like, why would I don't really believe that character would do that. And that's kind of where I was at. I just don't believe that character would do that. Mm-hmm. So.
Not after War Stories?
Yeah.
After War Stories, it seems like he'd do almost anything for... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think I have a come-on moment, because to me, the come-on moment is something that happened that was not believable. And I can't really think of anything for that. But I do hate that wash.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
I do hate that. I mean, I actually do like some of the stuff that follows with Zoe, because I just thought it was a great opportunity for that actress to show some things that she actually hadn't necessarily showed about her love for her husband. I feel like Wash had a bunch of opportunities to show how devoted he was to her. But I loved seeing that, like, really tough woman, that she did have the same depth of emotion as Wash did about their marriage. But I don't know.
It really reminds me of what
you do. It just happened so fast. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that was my thing, is it happened. It's just like...
Sure, there's consequences. I mean, that's the thing. Like, they just flew through an entire, you know, onslaught of things, then basically,
and it didn't matter for why.
Yeah, I mean, like, then they crashed a ship, which they lived through, and then, you know, it almost was apropos that someone couldn't make it through.
They had such a great moment, like, right before that, and you're like, oh, this is so great. Well, you know, it's like the whole thing, like, well, this landing's gonna be interesting. Define interesting. Oh god, we're all gonna die.
Well, okay, so for a character that I love so much, not Wash, even though I love Wash, probably my favorite. It was hard to see Shepherd Book end with no substance for me. It was one of the first times in the entire series that I thought, I think this is what an atheist wishes a preacher would say. With the whole belief line. I think Shepherd Book, when he died, he fully became a theist, like humanist. There's something out there, but really it's about people.
Yeah, but remember, that ain't a shepherd.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, because we never understood what his past was.
We do, because there's a graphic novel that I have upstairs that you can read if you'd like to.
I need to read that, because I haven't read it.
Is that the new thing?
No, well, it came out a while back.
Okay, The Shepherd's Tale.
Yeah, The Shepherd's Tale. I got it upstairs. Wait. Actually, did you bring it upstairs?
Anyway.
It might still be upstairs. Point being, I mean, because this is the guy that, like, I thought his interactions with the crew, we touched on it, during the show, earlier, that when he had interactions, they were so good. They were exactly what you wanted to be. You know, and Inara was like, so would you like to lecture me on the wickedness of my ways? And he's like, I brought you some supper, but if you prefer a lecture, I have a very few catchy ones prepared. Sin and Hellfire, one has lepers. You know, it's like that funny, you know, he's more of a friend first than, you know, a lecturer. I think one of my favorite lines from the entire series goes to Book, because Zoe, when they're getting ready to go get Mal back in that one episode, Zoe's like, preacher, don't the Bible have some pretty specific things to say about killing? And he's like, quite specific. It is, however, somewhat fuzzier on the subject of kneecaps.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, this, you know, this is a lovable, you know, religious character. And then it just kind of, I feel like it kind of neutered him. And so that was my least favorite part. I'm sad that Wash died. I don't want Wash to have died.
Yeah.
But I understand that, especially when Joss Whedon's been talking about preparing for Avengers 2. You know, he's like, not that he's trying to plan to kill a character, but he's like, you have to understand at some point there are stakes. Yeah. And if there are never any stakes to a situation, you can't get people involved. And so much like Laura said a little bit earlier, you know, we get to see a whole bunch of from Zoe because of that. So moving from there, transitioning to favorite moment.
I'm glad Inara's back. And that's like, even though I'll never, well, can't say never. I'll probably never get to see what it looks like. Like, I'm glad that there is, for their story, a happy ending in that she is like there and she's saying, I'm willing to work for this and I'm willing to work on this and be here. So, yeah, I like that.
Probably one of my favorite lines is when Kaylee is feeling very she's feeling very discouraged about their odds of getting out of the Reaver attack. Yeah, and then yeah. When Simon shows that he requites her love, she says something like, to hell with this, I want to live.
Yeah.
That's great. But I think actually one of the parts that really gets to me is when Mal is just getting the crap beat out of him by the operative and just trying to get this message sent out. And the operative hits this nerve in his back that he always does to incapacitate his victims before he kills them. And it doesn't work on Mal because of something that happened to him so long ago that there's no way that he could have ever predicted that that would be what saved his life. I mean, it's pretty clear in his interactions with the operative that he cannot have the upper hand. He physically cannot handle the operative. And also the fact that it's a weakness that actually saves him and, you know, gives him the upper hand. And that is just hopeful to me because it actually... something that I want to believe, and I do think I believe, is that everything has a purpose, I guess. Mm-hmm. And that even though we can't see it, some pains that we experience will actually work for good in the future. And I thought that was really powerful to me.
Yeah. One day Mal will be sitting in his rocking chair and like that will like light bulb will go off. And he was like, oh, God.
Yeah, right. My favorite parts, well, I have two, really. I don't know how else to say it, except I love it anytime River Tam kicks ass. I mean, just, it's all well choreographed and everything, but, like, when she, you know, that the doors open back up and she's there and they're all, like, dropping to the floor, I'm just like, yeah! It's so awesome. But I feel a lot like when I watch a movie and I'm looking for, like, action and stuff, I feel like, with the main guy from the A-Team, Hannibal, where he's like, I love it when a plan comes together. Mm-hmm. Like when they're going through that, you know, getting the Reavers to follow them and they end up fighting the Alliance because it all just works and you're like, yes, I love it when a plan comes together. That was cool. I really like when I'm watching a film, especially like a sci-fi movie or any kind of like action adventure movie, when like they earn getting to kick some butt, mm-hmm. and they just absolutely do it in just a really cool way.
Yeah.
I really enjoy that. I got a lot into that in this film.
Well, I'd say very similar. My favorite moment is that shot we get of the Reavers coming through the cloud.
Yeah,
You know, just face to face with the Alliance ships, and that mainly, for two reasons. The first is because the operative who believes in something so strongly and is fighting for and defending something with all the conviction anyone could muster, mm-hmm. finally gets to see, before he actually gets the truth of it, he gets to see exactly what he's been fighting for,
yeah.
even though he doesn't know it.
Yeah.
So it's one of those like narrative kind of,
yeah,
you got exactly what you wanted.
Yeah, exactly.
And has to kind of, you know, that ends up being one of the things that starts to destroy him. And because it gives me one of my favorite things, because I think Wash is my favorite character because I relate most to like the snarky kind of like,
you really?
Know, yeah, really? I know. It's, yeah, I know. What a surprise. It gets, like, I don't think that he had a lot of moments to shine in this movie. Mm-hmm. In the series, there's lots of Wash funniness and clever lines and kind of humor to kind of lighten some of the scenes, and I think him and Jane do that throughout the entire series. Mm-hmm. And in the movie, I think Jane gets a lot of good lines, but I think Wash gets like two.
Yeah,
you know, and so we get to see like Wash being an amazing pilot, mm-hmm. just being like, "I'm a leaf on the wind.
Yeah.
Watch how I soar." Yeah. You know, I just love really that. Great. And unfortunately, it follows right into him. You know,
yeah,
passing away, but just watching him do his work, and I love watching that scene every time. Yeah. I get all excited.
Yeah.
I wish it was longer.
Yeah.
You know?
And then he didn't die.
And then he didn't die.
And we come right back around.
But that's the problem. There is no one on the ship that I want to die.
Yeah.
Which absolutely. is amazing about this story. You know, like, I would not be happy if Jane died. I would not be happy if Kaylee died. I would not be happy if Griffin took a picture right now. Oh, I'd kind of be happy with that. I'm kind of sad that I didn't get more watch, but at the same time, if someone's got to die, I don't know who I would have picked, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
well, he didn't die heroically.
He did. He saved them all. So with that said, that's basically it. So I want to give all my guests who have taken time out of their busy schedules to join us here. Anyway, if people have enjoyed listening to you, they want to follow more what you're doing, we have three budding writers who are probably going to be super famous one day. You know, try to interact with them now so when they get paid large sums of cash, you feel less guilty about asking. So, Mark, let us know. How can we get a hold of you? Where can we find you at?
Well, that's the thing about writers. You don't really see a lot of them until something just happens. But if I was... Like I said, I always feel like I have the same thing to say every one of these episodes, but nonetheless, I was part of the 48 Hour Film Project recently. We won Best Picture, so you can go on the 48 Hour Film website for Greensboro and check that out. That was a lot of fun to make. It's a funny little take on a zombie film, not scary. And then I've just checked me out on Facebook. I've always got stuff going on. I'm in a band with Griffin and we play music and we're. Hey, we're playing October 19th at the Green Bean in Greensboro, so come out and see us.
And you're on the Twitters?
I am on the Twitters, and it's Mark Wingdinger.
Mark Wingdinger.
Wingdinger, which is the incorrect way to say my name.
All right.
That's Mark Wingdinger.
You can find me on Twitter at Griffin_Kale, and on, all the social media things.
All of them.
All of the things. I had a Tumblr account. I didn't ever post anything. So that doesn't really, yeah. But the main way to get in touch and like kind of figure out what I'm doing is through my website, dearcynic.com, which I think by the time this goes up, sometime in the next few days, you will have seen the beginnings of my new project, which I'm just waiting to unveil, but basically it is, I'm serializing a novel and of some descript. So I'm excited about that. And that'll be up this weekend of the 14th. I guess 14th is the Sunday. So
13th is the Sunday.
13th is the Sunday. 13th is the Sunday.
Very familiar with what Sunday is.
Oh, okay. The 13th is the Sunday. So by the 14th on Monday, there will be the beginnings. So look forward to sharing that with everyone. And I hope you'll check that out. DearCynic.com.
Laura?
Well, my blog is leavingteaching.com. I haven't posted on it in so long, I don't even know what it's called. It's leavingteaching.blogspot.com. But I hope to be posting there more now that I have more time. Because I just wrote a full-length novel.
Yeah, you just finished
there
it.
There you go.
But you can't read it because it's not published yet.
Yes.
Exactly. Word. But unless you're an agent or a publisher or an editor, you may contact me immediately. But I'm also on Twitter, and I don't even know what my handle is. I think it's Laura_Fissle.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Awesome.
I would also like to say that all three of these folks, Real World Theology, the actual site is hoping to add an entire posting section to its repertoire, so it's more than just the podcast again. And all three of these people are aspiring contributors and current contributors. Laura actually just started her series on Whoology, going through the entire relaunch of Doctor Who episode by episode, letting us know why we love the Doctor so much. So maybe Griffin can read some of those while he's going through the series eventually.
I'll eventually convince you through my brilliant posts to watch the series.
So also be looking for posts from them there. And if you want to interact with me or let me know of movies you'd love to hear us discuss on the show, then feel free to follow me on Twitter at the new Real World Theology Twitter account, Real World Theo.
So who is Theo, really?
You know, we're going to find out. If you follow on Twitter, you'll find out.
And that's R-E-E.
That's R-E-E-L. Real, not Real.
Get it?
Real.
Yeah.
Like Real Madrid.
You can also find us at our blog, realworldtheology.com, which, like I said, will hopefully have some postings, some more articles and reviews that were written, so you'll have reason to go there outside of the podcast. Like us on Facebook and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And if you do find us on iTunes, review the show, bump our rankings, and let's get more people involved on the conversation. Again, I just want to thank my guests. Thank you, guests, for being here. And you, the listeners, for taking time to make us part of your week. And until next episode, remember, story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.
Bye.